The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Wednesday. Gary.
I would pay 10 times the admission to a movie theater with a movie with William Macy in it just to have seen him in court jotting down notes when the reporters went up to him to ask him if he had any comment.
In his Fargo accent.
And he responds in his Fargo...
Oh, no. Comment about what?
Accent.
I'm just here watching other cases.
On the alleged college admission scam with his wife, Felicity Huffman. Lori Loughman, the actress. I mean, this was just when I saw the story yesterday. When I first woke up and saw it, because I woke up and saw it. This whole daylight saving time has made me sleep later, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. Because thank goodness the Republicans are doing their jobs and they've introduced a bill to stay on daylight saving time. So we'll get to that here in a little bit. But I was confusing it a little bit. I was like, well, wait a minute, is this the FBI basketball scandal? Wait a minute, this is something different completely. And you start reading it and you see that it's as Fox News has it, the alleged scam involving rich and famous clients paying millions of dollars to a network of counselors and coaches to ensure that their children be granted admission to some of the country's most prestigious colleges. And my first thing was, why to begin with? I mean, why would you go through that trouble to begin with? You can send them to any college. It really doesn't matter. What's the whole point except image, correct?
Well, and how good would you feel about it as you're telling the world, oh, my child attends said university, and in your mind going, they really didn't earn it.
I cheated to get them in. And when you see what they were actually photoshopping, apparently, some of the photos of kids to make it seem like, you know, they were high school athletes, and so they should be able to get admission because of their athleticism to a particular college, and they'd pay off these coaches and the coaches would agree to do it. And my favorite tweet yesterday was Ann Coulter, who superimposed her face on a bunch of different athletes out there saying, here's how I got into college.
Well, you know, when I was playing college football, I know that here's the other thing. And do they forget as well? We've asked about some of the liberals on Capitol Hill. Do they actually know that the internet exists? Because sometimes they pretend it doesn't. Now, imagine this grand scheme that you've built where you're photoshopping your kid's picture onto a team. Hey, you might want to change that. Why? He's wearing a soccer uniform. Oh, okay. And then, I don't know, they get into the school, right? Now, imagine that those kids become famous. They go on to have a career, whether it's acting or any other profession, but they become famous. And then someone all of a sudden in the media starts looking at, well, wait a minute. You didn't play ball here. You didn't play ball in high school. You didn't play sports. How did you get in? For me, it would be about how in the world would I even think, I mean, if that flashed across my mind for a second of doing that with my child, I would think, well, no, because the first thing that's going to happen is the media is going to come in and fact check. The media is going to find out at some point. Because I'm thinking, because if you're a celebrity, you think the world revolves around you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking everybody's watching every move you make. I don't know what in the world gets into people if these allegations are true. What in the world gets into people to make them think they can get away with such a grand scheme?
Now, apparently this was going on from 2011 all the way until February.
Yeah. Right. That was the surprising part.
And I know one of them had, you know, the I can't think of the guy's name here. I'll get here in a couple moments, but the one guy who was the one who arranged to get you know, really a doctor's certificate saying that my child can't take the SAT the same way as other children.
Yeah.
Right. And therefore they need a private place to do it, and that private place meant that they had adults there that would help them cheat or change the answers.
Yes.
On their SAT, and what was the other one? Is it the ACT? But when I saw that one, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. The other one I loved was the one where they were trying to get some parents were trying to get their child in and was talking to the lacrosse coach. Then they realized there was no lacrosse team in their high school to begin with. And then I'm reading this stuff.
It's like Vandalay Industries.
It is.
You know,
yes.
Hey, okay, we don't really have a lacrosse team, so someone at the house is going to have to pretend like they're the lacrosse coach of the high school team. Yeah, but we don't have a lacrosse team. I know. Just when someone calls, answer it, lacrosse. Hello, Vandalay, lacrosse coach.
Vandalay Industries.
Vandalay Industries. I mean,
I'm reading this here from Fox, Eric. Macy, 69. This is William Macy, the actor, dressed in it, and so immediately you're doing theater of the mind when you see this, right?
Right.
I mean, of any actor, because of him being in Fargo alone,
mm-hmm.
of any actors who should never be caught up in any type of crime, it should be him. Now, he wasn't charged, but he was involved in some of the sessions, as it's been pointed out. Macy, 69, dressed in a gray jacket and blue jeans, took notes during his wife's hearing. He looked engaged and focused on the terms of Huffman's release as they were being read aloud.
Mm.
Then somebody went up and asked him, would you like to have a comment on it? He said, no. Wow. The racketeering conspiracy charges ensnared coaches at schools such as Wake Forest, Georgetown, and the University of Southern California. Excuse me. Investigators said the coaches accepted bribes in exchange for admitting students as athletes, regardless of their ability. Investigators said parents would pay a predetermined amount to college entrance consultant William Rick Singer, who then would give the funds to the coaches. SAT or ACT administrators. The alleged fund amounts range from several thousand dollars to $6 million. The documents allege that Laughlin, the actress, and her husband agreed to pay bribes totaling $500,000 in exchange for having their two daughters designated as recruits to the USC crew team, despite the fact that they did not participate in crew, thereby facilitating their admission to USC.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, on Shameless, William H. Macy plays a con man.
Yeah.
It's like a group of, you know, it's like this family of, and I've only seen one or two episodes. I haven't seen it in years. It's on Showtime. But, wow, if these allegations are true about his wife and others, that's just, it's about as stupid of a crime as it gets.
Then investigators claim Huffman and Macy made purported charitable contributions of $15,000 to participate in the college entrance exam cheating scheme on behalf of their eldest daughter. Huffman later made arrangements to pursue the scheme a second time for her younger daughter before deciding not to. Huffman and Macy's daughter reportedly had twice the normal amount of time to take the SAT, and her proctor was paid to correct her answers after she completed the test. Wow. Prosecutors explained in a news conference Tuesday morning that many parents linked to the scheme obtained letters from their children's therapist explaining they needed more time for the standardized test as a way for their children to take the exams privately with paid proctors who would correct the students' errors. I mean, it's just, and I've always thought that if I had a criminal mind and was going to commit a criminal act, I would be the only one that would know about it, because I would just increase my odds. I would get caught if somebody else was involved with me. That it had to be a scheme that I would have to do myself.
Well, this is
with
what
nobody else
about,
involved.
We've said this about, you know, when we tear down conspiracy theories. The problem with conspiracy theories, especially the big grand conspiracy theories on huge levels, is that in order to pull something like that off, you would have to have a huge legion of people to not only execute whatever plan it was successfully, but they're going to have to keep their mouth shut. And they're going to have to keep their mouth shut forever. Well, people like to talk. And so when you conspire with people to do things, eventually someone is going to get wind of it. Someone's going to hear about it. You're talking about the one person who was the co-chairman of an international law firm.
Yeah.
You know,
and
being recorded and saying, well, you know, what do the schools think about this? And the witness, no. Schools don't know. Of course they don't know. What do you think is going on? What in the world do you think you're doing? But in part, imagine that one or more of these people thought that this was part of the legitimate process. That's the arrogance. That's the arrogance of the elite. I don't care who they are. Believing, A, even if you don't believe it's on the up and up, as Hillary would say, allowed and above board. Even if you don't believe that, you believe you're going to get away with it. That arrogance is just as great. It's just as much in play as anything else.
What parents would be complicit with their children to cheat for them?
Well, what are you teaching your children? What do you think your children get out of it? What it tells me is you don't put any value in a higher education. Because if they got access to that school without earning access to that school, then there is no real value. You may say $6.5 million, that's the value. No, it's not. It's zero.
What an amazing story. That is,
yeah.
Seriously, I mean, it's pitiful for these people to do that, but still, when I saw it yesterday, I'm like, am I really reading this?
Here's my question: how widespread is this?
Is this just the tip of the iceberg?
Is this going on elsewhere,
especially at all the elite colleges?
Right.
Probably this isn't happening much at junior college trade schools.
I'm guessing not, but where there is a demand for, you know, getting placed or getting accepted rather into a school like that, where there's any kind of demand, there's going to be what? A black market to serve it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
The parents charged today, despite already being able to give their children every legitimate advantage in the college admissions game, instead chose to corrupt and illegally manipulate the system for their benefit. We're not talking about donating a building so that a school's more likely to take your son or daughter. We're talking about deception and fraud, fake test scores, fake athletic credentials, fake photographs, bribed college officials.
And that was Andrew Lelling. A major or a massive federal indictment has accused dozens of wealthy parents, including actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, are among the dozens of wealthy parents, college coaches, and college executives that were involved in a nationwide college admissions scam. According to the federal indictment, federal prosecutors said Tuesday the scheme had two major pieces. In the first part, parents allegedly paid a college prep organization to take the test on behalf of students to correct their answers. Second, the organization allegedly bribed college coaches to help admit the students into college as recruited athletes, regardless of their actual abilities, prosecutors said. How did you ever think you were going to get away with it? I mean, how long did they think that they were going to get away with, you know, doing something like that? That's the one thing. And again, I'll state it again. I've always thought that if I was going to commit a crime, I would do it by myself alone. Nobody else could be involved in it because I couldn't trust anybody else. And here they're dealing with college coaches, and others have to know it. Others have to be doing some type of investigation. You're just going to get caught in that thing. But that's me not understanding, I guess, the criminal mind.
Well, again, according to the Wall Street Journal, in one case you had a prominent family paying, making a $400,000 donation to basically a scam nonprofit. There was no nonprofit that existed. And that money was funneled, according to the Wall Street Journal, funneled to then-head tennis coach at Georgetown University in exchange for having their daughter tagged as a recruit, you know, as an athlete. When there's more than one person involved, eventually someone is going to talk. And I don't care who that other person is. Eventually, that other person is going to talk. And you have all these. Imagine you're funneling this money in that one case. It's going to, according to the allegations, the person who was then the head coach, tennis coach at Georgetown. And you think it's 400 grand. You think no one is going to notice that?
And a lot of these people are well known. They're famous people.
Yes.
As we know.
High profile individuals.
Right. Not just the actresses, but other people. They were all high profile in the elite.
Right.
That has to be, to me, you and I have talked about this before. And I guess it's something that probably we don't understand and many other people don't understand, many of our listeners don't understand. The arrogance of the elite.
Yes.
You believe that you're bulletproof, that you can get away with anything.
You believe your money is going to buy you power and access. Sometimes it does, legitimately. Sometimes you have to work a little harder at it.
But you make the point, how many other of these scams might be going on?
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
A number of hazards are expected from a powerful storm system in the south. We started seeing the rain develop yesterday in the Four Corners region, and we'll see that system intensify today across the Central Plains. The severe thunderstorms connected with the system are part of a frontal boundary that'll be sweeping through western Texas today. From El Paso down to the Big Bend area, affecting portions of Interstates 20 and I-10 in the region. Then heavy rain today from eastern Texas will extend into Oklahoma, Kansas, right on up into the Great Lakes. So you'll definitely need the windshield wipers on I-35 north and south from Texas up to Minnesota today. Then along, of course, portions of I-80, I-70, I-40. Portions of I-80 in Nebraska and I-90 in South Dakota could potentially see some icing and mixed precip. A winter storm watch for the Denver area, deteriorating conditions as you move northward. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
100% of the time. Just ask them. Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true.
He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Also coming up on the show, besides talking about the celebrity college admissions scam, the Covington student, will tell you, Nicholas Sandman files a second defamation suit, this one against CNN, $275 million. You know, he might become a billionaire.
He could.
He might become a billionaire.
He could, yeah.
He'll be he'll be 40 years old saying, yeah, there was this, I don't know, just 1 hour time of my life that brought all this money in.
Right. I mean, essentially it happened, you know, the initial incident was one day. But then you think about, though, and on the serious side of it, you think about what a family might have gone through.
Oh, yeah. You know, well, imagine, death threats and everything. Yeah.
And even to the extent that the school was closed.
The school was closed. They needed to, you know, private security. They were, and you can make this case, they were terrorized by the irresponsibility of many media organizations out there.
Right.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I guess this will be the interesting thing. Will any of these places fight it, or will they all? Will the Washington Post fight it? Will CNN fight it?
Looking at how it played out, when you look at the media walking it back, there's a couple of things here. First of all, we go to the judge in the New York Times case regarding Sarah Palin, you know, where the judge basically, and this goes back to the whole target thing. Remember going back to Gabby Giffords and all of that, and that had been settled. And clearly the truth had come out about that original story. Right. But the New York Times did a story a few years later, and you and I looked at that and said, what did we miss? I mean, why are they bringing that up again when everybody knows that wasn't true?
We said it day one, the day we read the story, and I looked at you and I said, Eric, I think...
What did we miss?
I said, even though she's a public figure and it's mm-hmm. very tough to sue a politician, mm-hmm. I think this is something that was so well known.
Mm-hmm.
That this was discounted such a long time ago that you had all the editors get together and put together this editorial.
It was malicious. It seemed to be malicious.
Knowing that it was wrong, I mean, you can prove malice.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, if you ever want a perfect example of malice, it was it.
Right.
And the judge basically said, well, since they apologized, there's no big deal, and they said they were wrong.
And so I think of that mentality in a courtroom, and if you're, I don't know, if you're CNN or Washington Post or, you know, or the attorneys, of course, for those companies. Do you believe you're going to do that? Or do you believe that maybe this is best settled out of court? Most companies in situations like this, most companies will opt to settle because they don't want, because of the way, and I only say that because of the way the media came back and had to, and then you had other liberals out there saying, look, this was wrong the way this was handled and all that. So they essentially had to walk this back. If that had not taken place, then there you probably could say, well, there's a case for taking it to court or, you know, standing your ground on something like this. But I think with the way it played out, you're likely to see a settlement. It's not going to be anywhere. Right. The settlement won't be anywhere near what they're being. But this is what you do. You overshoot. You know, you ask for these kind of damages. But there is something to that. I mean, they don't just throw out these arbitrary numbers. They do throw out big numbers, but they go after something that is intended to be to repair the damage, in part repair the damage that was done with the actions of the accused.
Here's the difference. You can say almost anything about a public figure. He's not a public figure.
Right.
As a high school kid, you're not going to be able to make that case. And the other thing is, if I'm the attorney, we go for a jury trial on this.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want the average person sitting there. You don't want it. You know, I don't know. Maybe they do want a judge for this case because they will look at this and say, this is such a clear example of somebody who was not a public figure, and you may be able to use that as your defense.
And so I don't know where they would go with this. I guess it goes to the family is what is their goal? Because it would be, what's the family's goal? Is the goal to punish them so they won't do that again? And you figured that even if they don't, because what's going to happen is they'll settle out of court and claim we did nothing wrong.
Yeah, that often is part of the settlement. Is that there's no admission of guilt.
There's no admission of guilt at that point, mm-hmm. but everybody knows that you're guilty because you paid them off, and if mm-hmm. it, you know, whatever it is, and again, they may want it. Look, we'll give you $20 million, but we can't talk about what the settlement was, and we don't take guilt for anything. And so you ask that question, does the $20 million teach them a lesson? Because that's what I would want to do if I was the family. Maybe I'd want the money, but I'd also want to make a statement about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wonder, and if you sue, if you go after 10 different people on this, maybe you can make a statement with some of them. Settle with some, don't settle with others.
Yeah, you know, you look back at because the lawyers, the lawyer that represented Richard Jewell, back in the Olympic Park bombing in Georgia, that case where Richard Jewell had been verbally identified as a suspect. And then there was a lot of media centering around, you know, him and his personal life and the whole thing. And that's kind of where they changed the language and started using more the phrase person of interest.
Right.
Before they came out and said,
well, his
suspect.
His life was destroyed.
It was. And so the point being is that he became, I mean, really at that time, he had become a household name. And so imagine you're in that position. An employer doesn't really want to associate with you for whatever reason. They can't really trust. They don't know they're hearing all of these things. And that's the point. You look at, in the case of children, especially, it becomes especially damaging because of the fact that those children rely on their families and other adults, depending on where they are at the time, to keep them safe. And so whether it's transportation to and from school, when they're in school, at home. And so those children don't always have the ability to make a decision that where they could defend themselves from somebody who might be dangerous. So if there is a threat, those children are sitting there in their rooms at home, in their classrooms and schools, and in their mind, they can't do anything to protect themselves. Well,
right.
Well, legally, they often can't do what an adult might be able to do
to protect
themselves.
You're hitting the most vulnerable person out there is what you're doing, and I bet you the lawyers make that case. So we'll get to that coming up here. Also, Ocasio Cortez in full troll mode. Did you hear some of the questions that she asked the Wells Fargo CEO yesterday? It was just completely bizarre. The AFL-CIO says the Green New Deal is not achievable or realistic. And there's another thing, too. It would destroy the AFL-CIO, at least in the private sector. That's the other thing. It would destroy private sector unions if it ever went through. Lisa Page says the FBI discussed charging Hillary in 2016, but the Department of Justice said no, that it actually goes to the Department of Justice. So did Comey really make that decision, or were they told way earlier, nope, sorry, you're not going anywhere with this? And so we'll get to that. And then it all brings up the Bill Clinton tarmac meeting with the former Attorney General Loretta Lynch.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that coming up here. Where will the GOP go with the Democratic resolution to overturn the president and his national emergency? We will get to that. Also talking Senate GOP introduces a bill to make daylight saving time permanent. And we've been talking about the celebrity college admissions scam from yesterday. That story coming out. Let's get right to you. We go to Roy in Washington State. Roy, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. How are you?
Okay. My point is very good. My point is I'm going to go with a broad example, and then we can narrow it down to the college kids getting bought into school. Now, at 60 Minutes, they talked about how Big Pharma would have senators and have initiate bills, and then the senator would push the bill through, then the senator would finish his term, go to work for the Big Pharma for X amount of millions of dollars, and he'd be set for life. Now the junior senator that's watching all this is going, well, look at that. That guy just got rich by pushing one bill through. So all of a sudden there's kind of a permissiveness and pervasiveness in the consciousness or culture of the political system, Democrat or Republican, for this kind of activity. It's obviously true in many departments such as the police department, et cetera.
All right, but before we go too far on that, I understand the culture there, but that wasn't illegal.
Well, okay.
It's not. To make the point, that's not illegal. People may do things that we view as immoral all the time. What they did was illegal. I mean, they committed. There's a ton of different felonies here that these parents committed.
I guess in cases it's bribery or it's.
Yeah, it's bribery. It's bribery. It's fraud. It's a ton of different things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I could finish my thought about it, then I agree with. I understand from the legality, you're 100% correct. From the morality standpoint, I would much rather have a senator have his ass hang for all the people that died on OxyContin than for a few college, for a few.
All right, but what you're trying to do now, and we thank you for your call, but what you're trying to do is bring up another topic on this one.
Right, and link it.
Right, you're trying to link one topic to another. We appreciate your call, and we'll talk about that at some other time, but you're clearly just trying not to talk about this topic, but say this isn't important because this topic over here is more important.
Yeah.
So we thank you for your call.
And again, if you want to push for certain laws to be in place that prohibit them from doing that, great. But you're going down the populist route of saying, and how many people would hang for people being for people overdosing? Would it be the pharmacist? Would it clearly, I guess, in your mind, also be the drug maker? Right?
Right.
If you're looking at overdoses, you would have to look at the entire supply chain and how that came to be, which would have to include pharmacists.
But clearly you didn't want to talk about the topic we're talking about.
No.
You just wanted to link one to the other to get to your point. And we thank you for your call, but we'll move on. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, talking about the college admissions scam, the celebrity college admissions scam. We go to Jim in Battle Creek, Michigan. Jim, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to throw out a quick observation that you're forgetting to allow the Hollywood people to identify that their children are athletes.
I don't identify that as my child anymore. Yeah, I'm no longer the parent.
They identified as athletes, so they should be athletes since they identified as athletes.
Well, no, I would just totally disown them. I would go straight to the chase.
I don't identify as their parents.
Yeah, I would tell the judge, I don't know what you're talking about. That's not my child.
You're right. The kids should be able to identify as athletes if they wish to identify as athletes.
Right, and if the head coach accepts that, along with $400,000, then so be it. Yeah, great point.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, but it's the arrogance. It is that arrogance where you think that you're going to get away with it. That you think that, this is part of of what your money buys you. It doesn't apply to every celebrity, certainly. Otherwise, we'd see a ton of celebrities on this, you know, list, I'm sure. But the idea often applies, the idea of it's okay for me to send my child to a heavily guarded private school, but it's not okay for you to defend your home.
If you were that famous and had that kind of wealth, mm-hmm. I just believe if I had kids, I'd be tougher on them mm-hmm. than normal. Last thing I would want them to be is to have that entitlement mentality.
Right. I have in the past, I've actually, you know, told my children that an endorsement from me, even as your parent, it is very hard to come by. I love you and everything else, but when it comes to a professional endorsement, especially, you know, out in the workplace, you have to build that reputation on your own. You have to go out and build, you know, I can tell them, hey, you're a great person, but that doesn't really mean anything when it comes to work.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. So I'm just sitting here reading Dan Abrams' website, Law and Crime.
Right.
So yeah, are these parents actually facing prison time, or might they skate as we talk about, you know, the college admissions scheme?
Mm-hmm.
The former assistant U.S. attorney and current Pace Law professor Mimi Rocha thinks a little time behind bars is within the realm of possibility, given the amount of money involved in each of them, particularly Lori Loughlin, and the sophistication of the scheme. They would likely be facing jail time, she told Law and Crime. However, it will be within the sentencing judge's discretion as to whether to follow the guidelines or not, and a lot of different factors will play into that. CNN legal analyst, criminal defense attorney, and University of Georgia law professor Paige Pate ventured his guesses as to, you know, what any sentence might look like. Over a series of email, he said the time served in each case would depend mostly on the loss amount, how much money the government can tie to the alleged fraud, and explained that federal sentencing guidelines for fraud are primarily based on the amount of money involved, how sophisticated the fraud was, what role the person played in the alleged scheme, and whether they were the leader, the middle, or the low end of the conspiracy. With that in mind, Page estimated that full houses... Did you see the meme already?
Yeah.
It was Big House.
Yeah, right.
And her in prison garb. Estimated that full houses, Loughlin was facing 37 to 46 months if convicted at trial. Between 27 and 33 months if she enters a guilty plea.
Hmm.
Since Huffman is alleged to have spent quite a bit less, Pate estimated that the Desperate Housewives actress was facing 12 to 18 months if convicted at trial, whereas she would be looking at 8 to 14 months or possible probation if she were to plead guilty. Judy Rettleman is a former prosecutor, currently a defense attorney working in New York City, also serves as an analyst for Law and Crime Network, while noting that it was a bit early to say anything for sure about potential times behind bars. Rendleman said it was a distinct possibility due to the actress's high profiles.
Yeah, making an example
out of them, mm-hmm. Right. Yep. That's the whole point. They don't want it to happen again.
Yeah. So then you think about the, according to the story in Wall Street Journal, you have this co-chairman of a prominent law firm that donates $400,000 to a bogus charity. The charity doesn't exist. And that money is, according to the allegations, funneled to the head tennis coach of Georgetown, who is no longer there, by the way. Did that person also, the person who donated the money, also write that off on their taxes?
Ooh.
I mean, this is when you look at the law and how many different, in any given action, how many different laws might be violated. They may, crimes may have been committed. Then you have to follow the money trail as to how it happened. And then their behavior after that, which if they went on to claim that they gave money to, and we don't know that that's the case. I've seen nothing that indicates that. But the point is, in just demonstrating how they go through the investigation, the federal officials would look at that and say, okay, how many laws did they, in other words, was there an entire pattern to this person's behavior that tells us they deserve a greater punishment and punishment for each of those illegal actions?
And you make a you make a point, because the number of counts in it, and they, Law and Crime, talked to Robert Bianchi, who's a former prosecutor and a legal analyst for Law and Crime Network, and in an email he said, when he talks about the actors, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, he said, I think they are second-tier defendants compared to those in official positions accepting bribes for years and making a lot of money to falsify testing and award athletic positions to non-deserving students. He said, this is why the officials are charged with racketeering. Hmm. Huffman and Loughlin, on the other hand, were each charged for conspiracy to commit mail fraud and honest services mail fraud.
I would think, too, that there's greater consideration for individuals that might be lawyers. If you're a high-profile attorney, you're an officer of the court. Greater than most people, more than most people, know the law. Now, ignorance is no defense. Ignorance of the law is no defense. But I could see a judge giving greater weight to, you know, the illegal actions or allegations against a crimes committed by an officer of the court.
And he said, as a prosecutor, I would be seeking jail time for the rich and elite, though, who funded this bribery scheme and by definition stopped qualified and deserving students who worked hard and played by the rules their chance at taking one of those seats at the colleges. The arrogance of those parents who feel they can illegally flout the power and money is something I would want to make an example of, but again, to a lesser extent than the actual organizers of it. I wonder if these, I have to ask this question. Hmm. Now, the attorney, the guy in the law firm knew exactly what was, he knew what laws they were breaking. I wonder if some of these people did not understand the seriousness of what they were doing.
I do wonder how many of them believed that this was, or were
normal?
were told that this was part of the process. It still reeks of that arrogance, believing that, well, because you're Miss Actress or CEO or, you know, whichever person it was, your money and your power, your fame, your wealth does get you special access. And this is part of that. I would doubt that.
Well, you think about it. If they said this was going on from 2011 until now. So we're talking 8 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know, when you talk about these coaches or these proctors, how long they did this for.
Right.
And how many counts might be against them. But if think about this. If you were doing this for 8 years and you did it for 20 people, that's at least 20 counts of federal racketeering.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant prison time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The person responsible for orchestrating the whole thing, the person responsible, of course, for accepting the money, they know. Here's my question. In the case of the Georgetown tennis, the former head tennis coach, who, according to the allegations as outlined in the Wall Street Journal, accepted that $400,000 or the money was funneled through that nonprofit and was given to that coach, according to the story. How do you hide that kind of money? Because now you're getting into wire fraud, bank fraud.
Right, right.
Now, if you're talking about any kind of transaction regarding a bank, you've got more serious charges on a federal level because, unless you're delivering it in a duffel bag, that's probably going to be the case. There's going to be bank records. I don't know how, and that goes back to the stupidity, the arrogance. You believe that you can do that and that money is going to come to you and no one's going to find it? I mean, unless they find $90,000 in a freezer.
Here's what I don't understand, like for the tennis coach and the sports things. From what I know, they weren't getting scholarships.
No.
They weren't getting full rides. They weren't getting full rides to the colleges.
They were being recruited as an athlete, but it didn't. Nothing mentions a scholarship.
Nothing mentioned, right?
The school would have to be involved in that process.
Right. If you're going to give a scholarship, you're going to want tape on that. Yeah. I'm going to want to see tape on that person.
If you're a coach, you can say, "Well, no, we sent out the AD, or we sent out, someone from recruiting." And we notice this person, and right. We would like them to be a part of our school. We don't know if they're actually going to make the team, but we believe there's great hope.
Right.
And then that's all you have to say.
We expect them to be a walk-on on the team, and they will help. Right. And so because my whole point was, if you're getting a scholarship, whoa.
Yeah.
In order to get a scholarship, that would have to be a huge conspiracy. Because how many in a college are involved in ensuring that it is who is the underwriter at the college looking at the scholarship they're going to? I don't know if they call it an underwriter or not, but you understand my point.
Well, right. You have an entire committee of individuals and the administration fully involved, and there's tremendous oversight with that. So this is just a matter of, hey, we'd like this person to attend here. We might be able to develop them. We're not going to give them anything, but we would like them to attend. So you're just opening the door. Still illegal. And I can't reconcile the thought of a parent saying, I'm going to buy my kid's way through life. Because this isn't just about...
I'm going to buy and cheat my kid's way through
life. Because you can say, all right, yeah, but a lot of people leave an inheritance. That's not what this is. What this is you're buying merits for your children. You're buying them, you're buying their prestige. There are plenty of wealthy kids out there, trust fund babies or whatever you want to call them, that don't necessarily have the prestige. They didn't live up to the family name. And I'm sure if you go to the E! Channel, there's a ton of documentaries on where the family tree went south. But that's not what this is. We're talking about buying that prestige in order to what? Set them up in a world where people regard them as somebody who's to be respected. But they didn't earn it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on driver wellness. The medical card is one of the most important documents you can possess as a driver. Drivers are required by regulation to undergo DOT medical exams at least once every 2 years. If you have high blood pressure or diabetes, more frequent monitoring may be required. A DOT examiner will test your hearing and vision as well as check your blood pressure. As part of the exam, bring along medical records from your primary doctor and a list of any medications for evaluation. The best advice for how to pass the physical? Remain active, eat well, and take your medications if necessary. It's simple advice that should keep you on the road for many years. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Just saw this in the L.A. Times. Felicity Huffman woke to FBI agents with guns drawn at her L.A. home in college cheating raid. When Felicity Huffman opened her door to her L.A. home at 6 a.m. Tuesday, she was met by FBI agents with their guns drawn, according to a source familiar with the incident. Agents informed her of the charges in a sweeping college admissions fraud case and handcuffed her. The source said she spent hours in federal custody at a detention center.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, we can talk about the heavy hand of federal law enforcement, but in a situation like that, you're looking to, if you're arresting someone in this position, you believe there's a great incentive for that person to look to destroy evidence. We can have the debate about whether the guns needed to be drawn or not, but you have a heavy presence in order to, if you have a warrant for devices in that house or wherever they are, you need to make sure you secure those devices to preserve any evidence. But wow, if they are guilty of wrongdoing, they had to have known it was coming, right? You had to have known that this was, that the inevitable was just at any given time was just around the corner.
Well, I mean, I'd always be thinking in my mind, if I broke the law on something like this, I'd be waiting until I knew the statute of limitations was over before I breathed easier.
Right.
But I don't know. With the to even enter into some of this, there's an arrogance that you and I have talked about this. It's arrogance that I'm bulletproof, that I cannot, nobody will come after me.
Right.
I'm going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that in government.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And I don't know that, again, the details, I'm sure more details will come out about this, about these cases. But again, going back to that question, you think that they understood the full weight of everything. I think the money paid, whether it was, $50,000, $25,000, $75,000, or $6.5 million. To me, I'm looking at that going, wow, that's a ton of cash. That is a ton of money. You have to know that some, because I would want to, if I believe it's legitimate, I would want to sit down with somebody at the school, aside from the person taking the money.
Well, I know it's not legitimate.
No, and that's the whole point. If you believed it was legitimate, you'd be looking to vet that process and do it as openly as possible, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You would believe that it's part of the process. You would be looking to go meet the entire administration at that school and sit down or at least shake hands with all of them.
Already getting input about, Lori Loughlin, who's in a lot of Hallmark movies.
Yeah.
Apparently she was filming one. Mm-hmm. We don't know how this will affect.
Right, yeah.
There was no indication from the Hallmark network but she was apparently in the process of filming a movie for Hallmark right now in Vancouver, and so that's why she had to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the policy is. Because you look at the image of Hallmark and what they're trying to portray, and they don't want that tarnished in any way. Everyone gets their day in court, innocent until proven guilty. But if it turns out ultimately that there is a great liability here, and one of their key players, she's been in a number of their movies.
Yes, she has.
Yeah. And are they now, is it a series, When Calls the Heart? I'm not sure if it's a series or a movie.
I don't know
what that is. I don't know. I don't watch them, but, nonetheless, she has a pretty good presence on that channel, and they have a brand that they've built on Wholesome. Right.
And she's been a huge spokesperson too in the past, doing the commercials and, the promos and things leading up. For, I think, Christmas movies and other things.
Yeah, right.
Where
right.
She's been a prime, she's been a prime spokesperson for the Hallmark Network.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what happens here.
Yeah, I think it would have to, you know, you let it play out and see what happens and give her and her lawyers their day or days in court. But yeah, I wonder again, how widespread is this beyond the cases we already know about?
Twenty-five hours of reality every week. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. So lawyers for Covington Catholic High School student Nick Sandman filed a second defamation lawsuit on Tuesday. This one hitting CNN for $275 million. Can I go back to being 18 again before I decided to become a public figure? And can I put on a red hat and go out in the middle of somewhere so I can retire early?
You know, it'll be interesting to see how many more cases come out. You know that lawyer's not done.
No.
There's probably at least one or two more.
In a suit that was filed in the U.S. District Court in Kentucky, read in part, in short, the false and defamatory gist of CNN's collective reporting conveyed to its viewers and readers that Nicholas was the face of an unruly hate mob of hundreds of white racist high school students who physically assaulted, harassed, and taunted two different minority groups engaged in peaceful demonstrations, preaching, song, and prayer.
Whoa.
The suit addresses four television broadcasts and nine articles specifically alleging that they contained false information, and CNN would have known them to be untrue had it undertaken any reasonable efforts to verify their accuracy before publication of its false and defamatory accusations, the suit continues. Wow.
You know, that's an interesting point. They're saying, if you had just done your job on a very basic level, you could have discounted this information, but you chose not to do that, right? That's, again, the allegation, the accusation here in this lawsuit. We talked about that. And how many times has that happened in the last few years at least? I mean, just the last few years, how many times did the media jump on something and then they don't back away from it until, what, a day later, 2 days later? Still today, they're getting stuff wrong that they've repeated that's been proven wrong. Now, no one's filed suit on those things, but there are a whole number of them, number of items where they just get it wrong and they just keep going. They don't correct it.
You'll still see people out there doing the hands up.
Right.
Hands up, don't shoot.
Right.
Years later after that had been discounted, that was still being said.
Right. I mean, so in this case, though, you think about, if CNN in this case had sources, a number of witnesses, and they all said the same thing independently, right? And they could say, look, our sources, we have a number of sources, and they all say the same thing independently, and they could show that they did their homework, they did their work in the case, but still got it wrong. That's one thing. But as they point out in this lawsuit here, or allege in this lawsuit, the claim is, if you had just taken a reasonable amount of time and effort and gone through the very simple steps of, well, journalism, then you would have seen it. But when you have the editor of BuzzFeed a couple of years ago saying, no, we see the role of our journalists today, our writers today, essentially being activists. He didn't use the word activist, but that's what they were doing. They were acting as activists. Then you see the tone in the media, not just at BuzzFeed, but all over.
I want to read specifically from the charges. CNN's vicious attack on Nicholas included at least four defamatory television broadcasts and nine defamatory online articles falsely accusing Nicholas and his Covington Catholic High School classmates of, among other things, engaging in racist conduct by instigating a threatening confrontation with several African-American men, the Black Hebrew Israelites, and subsequently instigating a threatening confrontation with Native Americans who were in the midst of prayer following the Indigenous People's March at the National Mall. More specifically, CNN falsely asserted that Nicholas and his classmates were in a racist mob mentality, that's in quotes, and looked like they were going to lynch, that's a quote again, the Black Hebrew Israelites who were merely preaching about the Bible nearby. Again, they're putting the quotes as to what's actually in the article to make their case here. As you said, more specifically, CNN falsely, I'm going to read this again and just put the quotes in there so you know. More specifically, CNN falsely asserted that Nicholas and his classmates were in, quote, a racist mob mentality, end of quote, and, quote, looked like they were going to lynch, end of quote, the Black Hebrew Israelites who were merely, quote, preaching about the Bible nearby, end of quote, quote again, because they didn't like the color of their skin, end of quote, and, quote, their religious views, end of quote. And that Nicholas and his classmates then, quote, surrounded, end of quote, one of the Native Americans, 64-year-old Nathan Phillips, creating a really dangerous situation. That's a quote there, really dangerous situation, during which Nicholas, quote, blocked Phillips' escape, that's a quote, and tried to, quote, to leave the mob, causing Phillips to fear for his safety and the safety of those with him. That's another quote. While Nicholas and his classmates harass and taunted him. Yeah, that's strong. I mean, that's really strong stuff. In short, the false and defamatory gist of CNN's collective reporting conveyed to its viewers and readers that Nicholas was the face of an unruly hate mob of hundreds of white racist high school students who physically assaulted, harassed, and taunted two different minority groups engaged in peaceful demonstrations, preaching, song, and prayer. And then, as they write, CNN's accusations are totally false, and CNN would have known them to be untrue if they had undertaken any reasonable effort to verify their accuracy before publication of its false and defamatory accusations. In fact, it was Nicholas and his classmates who were bullied, attacked, and confronted with racist and homophobic slurs and threats of violence by the Black Hebrew Israelites, a recognized hate group, before unexpectedly and unexplainedly confronted by Philip, an activist who proceeded to target Nicholas while chanting and beating a drum inches from his face and being flanked by activist companions filming the event. During the January 18th incident, Phillips, a stranger to Nicholas, approached from afar and intentionally confronted the student before specifically targeting Nicholas for a confrontation, placing himself directly in front of Nicholas. At the time of the confrontation by Phillips, Nicholas and his students were assembled at the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, waiting to meet buses for their return trip home to Northern Kentucky. Nicholas never moved when Phillips approached him, standing quietly and respectfully for several minutes while Phillips continued to bang his drum and sing in his face. So there you go. And they go through the whole thing of Phillips becoming the mainstream media darling and going through the quotes and everything from CNN. I mean, it's pretty intense when you read it.
And then when Phillips appeared on a few days later on the Today Show, I believe it was Guthrie who asked, first of all, how are you doing? That was after this had all been discounted. What do you mean, how's he doing? Why don't you ask the children how they're doing? Well, And how the parents are doing, the families are doing, when they were threatened to the extent that the administrators at that school had to shut it for an entire day.
And they had CNN on that, too. In certain of his interviews,
Phillips had tears in his eyes as he lied and said Nicholas and the other students were shouting, "Build that wall, build that wall." CNN was several media outlets that ignored Phillips' obvious bias and provided Phillips a worldwide platform to spread his lies without any effort whatsoever to verify the accuracy of the inflammatory accusations Phillips was making against children. That's the point right there. Children.
Yes. And I have to wonder how many people that are aware of this story still believe the lies, still believe the false version of the story. You know, because this is the problem. As you mentioned, Gary, the whole hands up, don't shoot. But a story like this gains a lot of momentum on social media. Then people go about their day. And if all of a sudden there's a correction, you're not paying attention or you don't care to hear the correction. The point being is that I don't know that there's a way to measure the damage done here. Today's world.
Well, this is also powerful. CNN's agenda-driven fiction about Nicholas and the January 18th incident, this is actually from what they have filed, the court case, was not only false and defamatory, it created an extremely dangerous situation by knowingly triggering the outrage of its audience and unleashing that outrage on Nicholas and his classmates with its patently false accusations that Nicholas and other students engage in acts of racism and bigotry. CNN political analyst, remember this, Bakari Sellers, openly called for physical violence on Twitter, fueling that outrage of a social media mob of bullies. In an obvious reference to Nicholas, Sellers tweeted at 7:09 a.m. on January 19th, "He is deplorable. Some people can also be punched in the face." Rather than publicly rebuke Sellers, CNN endorsed Sellers' misconduct within a few short hours by commencing its seven-day agenda-driven campaign to assassinate Nicholas's character and reputation with inflammatory accusations. With inflammatory accusations of racial misconduct. Wow. Nicholas was an easy target for CNN to advance its anti-Trump agenda because he was a 16-year-old white Catholic student who was wearing a MAGA cap purchased earlier in the day as a souvenir. In addition to its substantial broadcast television and online audience, CNN republished many of its false and defamatory broadcasts and articles to its over 41 million Twitter followers. Wow. So $75 million for damaging his reputation, $200 million in punitive damages is what they're going for. They say the reason they want that amount, in order to punish and deter CNN from ever engaging in false, reckless, malicious, and agenda-driven attacks against children.
Here's the problem in challenging this, a lawsuit like this for CNN, is that eventually what the lawyers for Sandman are going to show, or what they're going to do, is require you to prove that your entire organization, we're not talking about just one or two people. We've talked about in the past when the media gets it wrong deliberately and how they, you know, there's often a meeting about anything from the graphics to what is going to be said in a show segment.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And how that story is going to be aired by anyone. It doesn't matter if it's an opinionated host or if it's going to be during the day, during a news segment. The news organization, CNN in this case, is going to have to show that they're going to have, well, their point, if you challenge this, would be, we didn't know. We got bad information. But then the lawyers for Sandman are going to say, well, wait a minute. Everybody in your organization, all of these individuals who have a combined, you know, whatever it is, many years of experience, and nobody questioned this. Nobody. You had a meeting. You had communication between a number of people. and nobody questioned this information? That's what they're going to have to show. If they believe, if they're going to show we're innocent of this, they've got to show that they went out of their way to back up what they were airing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. The Republicans releasing yesterday the private testimony of former FBI lawyer Lisa Page, and it makes you wonder and go, And we'll get to that coming up here, the top of the hour. You know, I was thinking that the whole CNN thing and the lawsuit being filed by Nicholas Sandman's lawyers out there. Do you think on the left there's this kind of, just because over the last 2 years, a mob mentality that we can say anything about Trump that we want, that we can say anything about anybody, that they've just gotten to the point of being so sloppy?
No, that's a great point. In their hatred for Trump,
right,
they're clouded. Their vision has become so clouded, they don't realize what they're doing or who they're willing to trample over in order to display that hatred.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. By the way, after today, you can't bother me for another month.
Why?
Because all the interesting basketball, college basketball, really started last night. You saw Gonzaga lost.
Yeah?
Yeah, number one team in the nation lost.
St. Mary's.
Too bad.
In their tournament, they're still, this isn't the final, whatever it is, 68, 66, 60.
Yeah, but it doesn't look good. They should just forfeit.
they should just quit now.
Give up.
I only caught like the last 5 minutes of that game. I woke up and I had the alerts on my phone. It's like upset in the making. I'm like, Gonzaga, really? Yeah. So the other thing is, thanks for everybody who texted me but emailed me and let me know and put it on social media that the Aerosmith van being found on American Pickers was on Monday night, except it wasn't that episode. It was part two.
How dare you people get it wrong?
Now, a few people have sent me the actual place where you can find it on the website, so I can still find part one.
Yeah, okay.
Right. But I was all excited yesterday. I went, all right, it's American Pickers where they find it. And look, I said, this is done in 2019. How can this be 2019? That was last year that they actually found it. And it was the episode where they've already found the van and now is trying to get in contact with Aerosmith to find out whether they could sell it back to them or refurbish it or do whatever.
Right.
And so I couldn't watch it. I was a minute in and I said, I can't watch this. It's like watching Home Alone 2 and you haven't watched one.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to do that.
All right, that's from Seinfeld. I'm sorry.
That
George said that, by the way. I plagiarized that from, I can never run for president. I plagiarized that from Seinfeld.
Well, speaking of presidents, the president is in Home Alone 2.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
He makes a cameo.
Cameo. Remember, one of the producers or something said that he wouldn't allow them to film there unless he got the cameo.
Right.
The cameo was required for them to film at the hotel.
Yeah. Well, like they weren't going to ask him for the cameo anyway. I mean, that didn't cross their mind. Remember, that was years ago before they hated
him. Well, they didn't hate him back then, so it was no big deal.
Right. You know, so, and now it's, he demanded it. It was required.
It was negotiating. I want to film in my hotel, give me a cameo.
Yeah, you want to film in the hotel? What about a cameo?
Well, we have to talk about this in a pre-hate Trump mindset.
Yeah.
Because it actually fit in very well to that movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That short part where
the idea was perfect, that young Kevin, you know, is kind of, well, he's looking for the bathroom at that point. But he's wandering through, you know, the Trump resort, the Trump hotel, you know, and he's looking for the bathroom.
Now,
it just happens to run across Donald Trump himself.
Trump haters, don't call us, because you've been in the hate no matter what Trump emotional nightmare for a while now.
Right.
We're talking pre-hate Trump here.
And while Macaulay Culkin was willing to defend Michael Jackson, he's not willing to defend Donald Trump. Man, I wish I could say I was so brilliant to have written that, you know, that made that up, created that thought.
Yes.
But it's actually just the truth. It was a simple observation.
Well, we talk about the Trump derangement syndrome, though, in that context. And as you and I have always said, I don't. What do you think of Trump? My feelings are neutral. I don't know him. From what I can see, we probably would have problems communicating with each other. I might say, if you were to ask, and we might not, you know, you just don't know. I mean, maybe some preconceived notions in there. I know that we would have a healthy disagreement on a variety of different issues. We'd have agreement on a variety of issues. But Trump has always been Trump. Trump's personality has always been that way.
Yeah, right.
And he's always been Trump. So there is nothing new there. There is nothing new for me either to like him better or dislike him better. And to get to the point of Trump derangement hate syndrome, you really have to work at that. In my opinion, you really have to work at it.
I think so.
But we had talked about this with the whole CNN suit here. Nicholas Sandman and his attorneys going after, I guess you'd say the Nicholas Sandman family going after, and the attorneys, I don't know if he could do that himself, whether he can directly hire the attorneys. I guess the suit would be about him, though, because he would get the money. He is the damaged party, so it is his lawsuit. It isn't the family. It is him.
There could be damages for the family, yeah.
But it's his lawsuit because he is the one, though, that was. Now, you can make the family was also damaged because of the threats against the family, yes. Mm-hmm. But he is the initial party that was.
So he's the focus
that was damaged.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But we've talked about Trump derangement syndrome, and we said, look, we're adults, and so we view politicians. We don't practice, if you've listened to the show, we don't practice political idolatry where we have absolute loyalty and our candidate can do no wrong. We've never had that. Yet on the other end, we've never had the Trump derangement syndrome or any derangement syndrome of any politician. We'll hit them specifically on the issues. We'll hit them hard if we disagree with them, and we'll compliment them graciously if we believe that they're doing the correct thing. It's pretty simple. There's not a lot of gray area, and it's pretty black and white. And we look at it that way because we're adults and we analyze what's going on. And to get caught up in the emotional drama of what so many in the media get caught up on, we just think isn't productive. It's not a productive way to go through life. And the other thing is, to be honest with you, what other people do and how other people have drama and how many other people scream and yell in their lives really isn't going to affect my life much. I'm going to go on with my life no matter what. I'm not going to really let them affect the mood of my life. I'm not going to go around and say, my life is nothing because of who's serving as president and I don't have a chance anymore if it's a Democrat.
No.
We will criticize them the same way. But people do get caught up in that. And I had asked you the question earlier about CNN when you think about it, because when we, looking back to the Nicholas Sandman, I think we were off for a couple of days. Was it a Thursday or Friday when it came out? Because I don't believe that initially when the first minute edited tape came out that we were on the air the next day. I think it might have happened where we had a day or two until we actually got on the air. I know that my thoughts were observing it with zero emotion. There's no emotion. I wasn't taking any sides. I was, what is the situation here? I was analyzing it. I put myself, as we often do, in that investigative mode and went, well, the kid didn't do anything. He was smiling, but he didn't do anything. There was nothing being said.
Right.
There were smiles, but this thing seems to be highly edited, so we'll wait and see what happens. Right?
I don't know any other way to approach it, because if I'm not there, if I don't witness it myself, then there's no way for me to know, you know, completely and fully what happened.
Well, we're opinion people too. We're not even news people, and we look at it that way. How many times people say, "What do you think about this?" Well, I can't tell you yet because I don't have all the facts.
I can't form an opinion if the story's not complete.
Right, and there just isn't enough information on the story. There's been a lot about how the media has jumped on the airplane crashes and everything else. It's like, look, you have no idea what it is yet. These are complicated things. And the same there. You know, we have told you what the NTSB, the FAA, and whatever other civil aviation groups around the world have said, or government aviation groups. And there's more questions than we have than any type of opinion, because we just don't know. But you and I have always had a thing, and it was before we met each other, probably before I was even in the media. I never cared to be first about something. I cared to be right about something. And there seems to be this jump to be first, no matter whether you get the facts straight or not. And then if you don't get the facts straight, you just move on to the next topic and sort of ignore it. Until you get stopped dead in your tracks because you've defamed a private citizen who's a child. But I wonder if the mindset that gets you into the emotional derangement mindset, where you're just enraged by everything, we see that in the public, we see it on social media, but when we talked about some of the CNN coverage on that, when they didn't have the complete facts, you could see it, you could sense it, you could hear it, you could read it. It was a Bakari Sellers. You could see it in what he tweeted. And you and I said, have they become so deranged that they work for a media company and they sit there and say, okay, I got to have some type of discipline maybe when I'm on the air, but if I go on Twitter, I can just say whatever I want and defame somebody, not understanding that you represent your company at that point when you're on and you've got that blue check mark and you represent them, and it's a Twitter with a CNN on it, and all of a sudden you think you're just a private citizen within your own private blog with your own people throwing out whatever opinion you want, not based on fact?
Well, I mean, we talked often about the social media activists, and there are many. And these are individuals who want to be activists. They really clearly don't care about getting it right. The only thing they want conveyed is the anger. And it's all about one person. And you're willing to distort the truth to the point that it's damaging to others, but you don't care, even if it's kids. You don't care. Joy Behar, well, it doesn't matter.
Yes, we're
desperate. We're desperate to get him out of office. That desperation My first job was as a lifeguard, and when you go through the training, they'll teach you that the person that is drowning is desperate, and they will pull you under
right.
or climb on top of you, even if it's hurting you, in order to get air and survive. And so I think about the people who have been just so desperate. They will just, they have this bulldozer mentality. It doesn't matter who they trample on. It doesn't matter whose reputation they damage. It doesn't matter, even if it's kids. They will, and you saw it play out on social media as it was happening. You know, the whole punch in the face comment mm-hmm. and all of this. You saw that very clearly. It really is that mob mentality. Build the hatred. It's the original hatred for one person, but anybody who supports him, gets it.
And it also goes back to the F word, that this person is so unacceptable that anything that we do is acceptable and we can justify it in our minds. Well, that's actually the fascist mindset, is it not?
Yeah.
We can break the law. We can damage somebody's reputation because by any means possible, this person should get out. And as we have said, when you actually sit back and you get out of your Trump derangement syndrome or your political idolatry, whether you're a person who practices political idolatry on the right and you worship Trump and he can do no wrong, we have said it across the board. Of course he can do wrong. He can do wrong. He can do right. We're all human. None of us are deities. When you take yourself out of that and you just look at it and say, okay, what do I have to do? Well, you have to work in the system that is set up here, the republic that is set up, and the Constitution that is set up. I can't violate anybody's rights because I don't like who's in political office. I can't break the law. I can't defame somebody's character just because I don't like who's in political office. Why? Because we follow the rules and regulations. We follow what the law is. Why? We're not fascist. Those who believe that they can do anything at any time, and you and I remember the late Ed Schultz who said it on when he had his MSNBC show, whatever we have to do, whatever it is. And he was talking about illegal things when it came to voting.
Yeah.
Whatever we have to do because it's unacceptable. And this was during Bush. No, I'm sorry. This was the first year of Obama. This was the first year of Obama because this was Obamacare. When he said that Republicans want you to die, they want to, you know, make money off your dead corpse.
And this was after. Okay, right. So it was
this,
after
this,
that.
This,
okay.
Yeah, this was Obama. Yeah. So remember, it's always existed. This isn't just a Trump thing. It's that they believe that I look at an Ocasio-Cortez and I've said, look, and what have we said? Their ideas are insane. I don't believe they're insane. Their ideas are insane.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to stop them. We need to stop them through the democratic system, the democratic republic system we live under. They don't think the same way. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we'll get to your calls and comments, but have to let you hear this story. Right. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's office tweeted out a set of guidelines Tuesday afternoon instructing citizens on how to use and what to put in their toilet.
Oh, listen up. This is very important.
The tweet explains there are only four things that should go in one's toilet. Poop, pee, puke, and toilet paper. That's from the tweet.
Okay.
Everything else causes fatbergs.
Fatbergs?
Yes. Fatbergs.
Sounds like some kind of nickname, political nickname for the former mayor. Although he is not overweight.
The city's website defines fatbergs as the masses of congealed grease and personal hygiene products that have been found lingering in sewers around the world. So there you go. Your mayor has let you know.
All right. Well, if you really mean it, you're going to have to enforce it. You're going to have to enforce it.
Ah, toilet guards.
Yes. Before you flush, we're going to have to see. Yeah, but I don't.
A new organization, yeah. PSA.
Yeah. Yeah, the toilet security of New York. Flush guard. Here's your forecast.
A number of hazards are expected from a powerful storm system in the south. We started seeing the rain develop yesterday in the Four Corners region, and we'll see that system intensify today across the central plains. The severe thunderstorms connected with the system are part of a frontal boundary that'll be sweeping through western Texas today. From El Paso down to the Big Bend area, affecting portions of Interstates 20 and I-10 in the region. Then heavy rain today from eastern Texas will extend into Oklahoma, Kansas, right on up into the Great Lakes. So you'll definitely need the windshield wipers on I-35 north and south from Texas up to Minnesota today. Then along, of course, portions of I-80, I-70, I-40. Portions of I-80 in Nebraska and I-90 in South Dakota could potentially see some icing and mixed precip. A winter storm watch for the Denver area, deteriorating conditions as you move northward. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. We're Eric and I working hard again today, aren't we? It's a tough job. Somebody has to do it.
We're keeping him honest.
Got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. Let's head right to you. We have been talking about the new lawsuit. We've been talking about the college admission scam, the celebrity college admission scam that's generated a lot of interest. But just here in the last couple of minutes, we've been talking about the CNN lawsuit. Nicholas Sandman and his attorneys, the Covington High School student, suing for $275 million in damage. $75 million for ruining his reputation, $200 million in punitive. What do you think that they'll agree to? If it doesn't go to court, which I just don't think CNN would want this dragged through court. I just don't.
Yeah.
$20 million, $30
million? It would probably be in that range for each of those companies being sued.
Yeah.
Depending, again, I mean, you only go at them when you have something, as they say, with teeth. There are a number of things that they would, you could go to a lawyer and say, well, I want to go after them for this and this and this. This lawyer is very experienced in terms of defamation suits. And that adds to it. That's who you want, because they're going to go right to it and find things that you probably wouldn't, you know, consider, and they're going to build a pretty strong case. So if they settle, it could easily be tens of millions of dollars. Yeah.
We got a Carl in Minneapolis. Carl, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi, Carl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hey, so my comment was, I don't know that I'm thinking of another one of these cases of essentially what you could call media malpractice, where there's been anybody that's actually had standing to file a defamation suit. Somebody essentially that falls into the category of, you know, they're not some kind of public official. They're not some kind of, you know, celebrity or somebody that, you know, that basically you can't file a libel suit or won't, you know.
Well, you can't. It's tougher if you're a public figure.
They won't stick.
It's tougher if you're a public. Not that you can't win. I mean, what, Carol Burnett won? Didn't Tom Selleck win?
Tom Selleck won because
I think it was Tom. Didn't somebody come after him, one of the tabloids, and say, you know, do stories that he was gay?
Yeah, there have been a number of celebrities that have won cases over the years.
But the strongest part of this is, number one, the accusations of what they did to him. Number two, he is a private citizen. You can't make the case that he's a public figure. He's a child So he's a private citizen who is legally a child.
Well, and that's,
I don't know the stronger case.
That, well, that's it. I think the fact that he is underage essentially affords him less of an opportunity to defend himself when things become threatened. When his life becomes threatened, when his security becomes threatened, he relies on others, adults primarily, to protect him. To even though he might have a driver's license, he relies on decisions by adults to keep him safe. And I think there's probably going to be consideration for that. I got to be honest. I don't think, and I think for that reason alone, if it were me looking at something like this, I wouldn't want that to play out. Because here's the question. Do you want to play it out and still lose?
No.
You want to have this thing drawn out and drawn out and drawn out? Or do you want to have a non-disclosure agreement put in place? We admit no wrongdoing. We'll settle this so that we can all go on about our business, blah, blah, blah.
Advertisers. That's all I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. Not even when I'm going to lose. I'm thinking of future advertising if I'm CNN.
Because your methodology is going to be basically how you run your news department, how things play out, how something actually gets to the point of being an event and then all of a sudden being a story or series of stories. All of that is going to be under scrutiny.
It would be the coverage of the individual witnesses inside the news departments and how they actually covered the news. And it would be, I believe, the potential threat of embarrassment, which would hurt future advertising for CNN. And just because how long would a trial like this go on for? A month?
Yeah.
Like 2 months? I don't know.
But
do you want that kind of bad publicity? And then if you lose, because remember, the whole thing is about you have defamed the reputation of a child.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about Trump.
No.
It's about defamation of character of a child.
One of the things that's often done by the lawyer, in this case, the lawyer for the family. I don't know if this was done, but often they will request that the company that they're suing preserve all documents, including internal documents pertaining to the situation. If that's the case, and if the lawyers for Sandman's family could get those documents, now you've got internal documents and communications being shown as part of the evidence of, okay, how did you come to this conclusion? What decision was made here to air this? What decision was made to portray this situation as this? And how many people were involved in that decision making? Do you really want your internal communications to be out there? Because forget about what we know and how it actually played out. There's a lot we don't know. And so what about text messages between employees of the organization, management, news directors, editors that are making decisions? It's quite possible that the lawyers could ask for all that information. It's quite possible they've already, in sending their initial letter to CNN or anyone they're suing, requested that they preserve that information. And that begins an official, once you've sent that letter, that is part of the official process. And you better be clear, or you better be careful of how you go about responding or your lack of response to that. The point being, and we don't know if that's the case here, but if I were the attorney of the family, that's the first thing I would do. Or that's part of what I would do in that first letter to the organization.
Let's go to Larry in Illinois. Larry, you're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Larry. Welcome.
Hey, you know, I think this lawyer, is his last name Lynn? I believe he defended Richard Jewell.
Yes, we talked about that.
Okay. All right. Anyway, this CNN thought they were in pretty safe ground with this because look at clear back in 2016, we had a Chicago man pulled out of his car, beaten, while people stood there and yelled, "You voted for Trump." In Houston, Texas, in November of 2016, a little boy's mother kicked him out of the house because he voted for Trump in a school election. And then we had a lady.
Okay. We don't need the list. What's the point? What's the point you're trying to make?
Right. The point I'm trying to make is this boy, this Nick Sandman, had a MAGA hat on.
Yes.
And they knew if they showed him wearing that, that's all they needed to do was to, you know, the person has a MAGA hat on, they're a target. You can beat on them. And they messed up because this family wasn't going to take it. And all the rest of these people have taken it. And that's the point.
Well, that's unnecessary. That's not necessarily true. If you don't need,
it is true.
No, it is. And if you believe, then that's their problem. If you believe that the law has been violated and you're a victim of somebody who has violated the law in any way, that's up to you to do something about it. And I know the instances that I know of. You have had employees that have been fired. I don't know if there's been lawsuits against it, but people have been fired. But if you're wearing a hat and you believe that your rights have been violated, you file suit.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those other cases that if it happened, those people should be prosecuted. If somebody was beat up, was wearing a MAGA hat, I don't know of any case where police are stating we're not going to investigate it
right.
because the person was wearing the hat.
Right. In fact, there was a case here in Texas, and it was caught on video, and a couple days later, they caught up with the guy, and police arrested him.
Right. So I don't know people that are getting away with doing things, and if they are getting away with doing something and you've been a victim of it, well, then you should do something about it. That's
right.
Your choice to do it. But in these cases where people are being attacked, I don't know of one incident where police are not investigating it
right.
and arresting people if they find the people that are responsible for it.
If it rises to the point of assault or breaking the law at all. I mean, right. if you're talking about shouting at someone, shaming someone, authorities would probably still look at that and determine whether someone's rights were violated. And if anything unlawful happened in that situation. Right.
But if you believe you have a defamation lawsuit, and a defamation lawsuit is different than an assault case.
Right.
And each must be taken by looking at the individual merits of any law breaking that may have been done, either civil or criminal.
Right. Yeah, this is a civil setting.
But to make the case that people are getting away with law breaking on a consistent basis here, you'd have to provide the facts to me on that.
Right.
Because I don't know that. And if you do believe that your civil rights have been violated and you have a civil suit and you don't file, well, that's on you. It's not on anybody else.
Right.
That's not on society's fault. Or that's not on society. A lot of other things could be, but that wouldn't be. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Mark in Indiana. Mark, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Yeah. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Hey, Eric.
Hi.
Hi. You remember years ago, I called in a perspective. It was in April about putting our national budget in perspective of using somebody's monthly income. And then you guys being a little smarter than me, remember you were swimming around in your pool that summer, Gary, and you came
yes.
up the idea of the yearly? Yeah.
Drop the 8 zeros. Yes.
yeah. And the petabytes now.
Yeah.
But this time with the Nicholas Sandman case, most people don't realize that you're dealing with CNN, which is a little guy compared to the big conglomerate, which they're in Dallas, worth over a couple hundred billion dollars. Well, they're insured against these things, you know, lawsuits. So here, this whole perspective way I look at it is this poor child now shows up on Wikipedia. you know? And who knows how much money he's going to have to need. I think this lawyer, if they try to settle out of court, he should just put it to a trillion.
There's not an endless policy amount. There's not a writer that says you can settle, you can agree to settle, and your policy is going to cover every dime you agree to. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you don't get.
No, I know.
Yeah, it's going to cost CNN. They're going to feel a bite because of it. The excuse that they have insurance and therefore they won't feel the bite. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Most media companies. Insurance companies are very wary to sell you an insurance policy, especially when you're a conglomerate like CNN.
A global news organization.
Where so many people can make a libelous statement that could cost you, as an insurance company, hundreds of millions of dollars. Most likely, I was reading one article said, most cap it off at $10 or $20 million, and that would be an extremely expensive thing to do for any media company. And then if you lose a big case, you may be able to get a $20 million liability policy that's costing you $10 million a year.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is that the underwriters are looking at that and saying, you know, what is the risk here? Well, you have how many reporters and how many parts of the world, and the fact that you're on every minute of every day, you have live programming going on. Not just one channel, by the way, and not just one outlet.
And you have Don Lemon, who asked about whether black holes can take down an airplane.
Right.
And so you're saying, how competent are the people that actually do our shows?
Yeah, the coverage would be limited at best. What they have is they have a huge team of lawyers, and they'll either look at that and agree as an organization to fight it, or they'll agree to settle. I mean, that's going to be it.
I don't want to play an attorney, but I have to imagine if an attorney looks at this, they just go, settle. Settle.
Well, they're...
Settle.
It's likely they've already had that discussion. And it won't be long, if it hasn't happened already, before they have that discussion with the team. Because the first thing they'll do is they'll counter. They'll say, well, no. And they're basically playing the back and forth. But eventually, they're going to get to a decision of whether this goes to the court or whether it doesn't. And if it doesn't, that really is a decision by CNN. That means settlement, unless the family drops the suit, which is not going to happen.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.